Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Dr. Soren Show, discussing health topics that matter to you. The views expressed on this show are those of Dr. Soren and his guests and do not represent the views of Blue Sky Broadcasting. Consult your doctor before making any changes.
Welcome to the Dr. Soren Show. I'm Dr. Soren Isparescu, and today I'd love to share an inspiring story about Ashley Holden and her battle with cancer as a young pregnant mom getting that diagnosis and her struggle and how she's overcome. And so, Ashley, thank you so much for being willing to come on the radio, come on our show, and talk about this battle.
Thanks for having me.
You know, part of this is we all have struggles in life, and some of our struggles are bigger than others, and this is about as serious of a struggle as you can get in life. And I just love overcomers, and I love your positive attitude and your positive energy. And so I would love for you to share that with everybody. So let's start at the beginning. So tell me about your life before your diagnosis.
So before my diagnosis, we were living in Ocean City, Maryland, and we were planning on moving out to North Idaho because we fell in love with it. It's a beautiful place to be. And I was having symptoms before I even moved here, you know, a year almost before my diagnosis. But
I'd love to hear kind of like, so you were married, you married your high school sweetheart.
So we were living in a townhouse on the ocean. Daughter Addison, who was four at the time, was going to a private Christian school, married Fonzie, who's my high school sweetheart of almost 11 years now.
So your life was great. You were married to your high school sweetheart, had a beautiful four-year-old daughter, moved out to northern Idaho because you have family out here. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah, so life was perfect. I was completely healthy, athlete. No health issues whatsoever.
And I think you're okay. We'll just share a general number. But you were in your 20s.
Yes.
So very young.
Yeah. So, you know, the symptoms that had started right before I moved here were kind of like gym soreness symptoms, you know, never anything too alarming. So we moved to Idaho.
Sorry, I just want to interject one other thing. What were your plans? Like, what was thinking through your head? Like, what were your plans for the future before cancer kind of like...
Moving to North Idaho was a complete blank slate. You know, like, fresh area, new people, new opportunity for business. I'd always wanted to start my own kind of, you know, marketing consultant kind of business and also within the nursing industry. So that was what it was for me and my husband. It was a complete, you know, let's go into the law enforcement. We've never really been on this side of the world. So it was a completely new area for us. So the sky was the limit.
East Coast, you're excited. You moved out to this new area, new opportunities, new friends.
Yeah.
Life was going great. Had all kinds of plans for the future.
Yep. It was just like a leap of faith and moving somewhere completely new, and we were ready.
Okay. And then what? Now describe the symptoms you started.
So I started feeling on the left side of my neck like it was just aching all the time. Like I just wanted to crack my neck all the time, you know. Sore, muscle, just like I could never really be normal on that side of my body. And we moved here in July of 2018. Fast forward to December of 2018, I found out that we were pregnant after just losing our son in 2017 at 6 months pregnant.
Oh, man.
And so this was very scary, but we were really excited, you know. Already knew it was going to be a high-risk pregnancy, so I knew that I was going
because
to have
Because you lost a kid
because
in 6 months.
Lost our son. October 31st, 2017.
Wow.
So, we were really excited and found out I was pregnant. A few weeks later, I found a small lump on the side of my neck. And I had asked my Aunt Candy, I'm like, you know, don't freak out, but she's a radiation therapist. So she was the perfect person to ask, you know, I have this lump here. Can you kind of feel it and let me know what you think? She's like, babe, I don't want to freak you out, but you need to go to the doctor immediately. December. Went to the doctor. They ordered an ultrasound, which showed that I had a group of lymph nodes that were swollen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was 12 weeks pregnant around this time. I was about 7 or 8 weeks pregnant. So really, really early, just found out.
Mm-hmm.
They put me on Augmentin, said you probably have some weird kind of virus going on, or, you know, let's just kill it. You can take these. They're safe for pregnancy. So I'm popping them, you know.
So it made you feel a lot better initially.
No significant change.
No, but I'm
saying,
like, emotionally, you felt
better. Yeah, like, okay.
You thought, oh, it could be cancer,
yeah.
And then you're like, oh, it's
yeah,
just a little infection.
Yeah, it's some kind of virus, you know, that can be treated with medicine. After taking the whole bottle, it changed nothing. In fact, the lump grew a little larger. Pain got worse. I had hyperemesis from being so sick and pregnant. And just could not understand what was going on. So my doctor referred me to an ENT in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And I saw him. He put me in the hospital for a week on IV antibiotics. At this point, the lump that was probably about, I don't know, a baby carrot size went to a navel orange.
Oh, man.
Now we're in February of 2019.
Okay.
And they also did a needle core biopsy at Kootenai, and it was inconclusive. All of my blood levels were normal. The tissue showed nothing malicious.
Mm-hmm.
There's no significant findings whatsoever.
Okay.
So now I still have this navel-sized orange of we don't know what it is. But lymph nodes that are swollen for some unknown reason, and I'm further along in the pregnancy. I'm super sick. I have no answers, but we're just going to watch and wait. You know, 4 follow-ups after that hasn't gone down. They don't know what to tell me. We're going to watch and wait. So now I'm in April, and I find out.
So that week in the hospital with the IV antibiotics
was for nothing.
But you spent a week there.
A week in the hospital.
And you're still not getting better.
Yep, still not getting better. Still super sick. No answers.
Mm-hmm.
Several doctors in and out, you know, monitoring the pregnancy, labs being drawn like every few hours, running every test imaginable for every kind of disease imaginable. Any kind of rare, exotic, or foreign, you know, diseases imaginable, all negative for everything. So now I'm in April,
and this mass is like growing.
Like it's huge. It's to the point where
you said a navel orange.
So it's like back in my, even up to my ear in the back underneath. I just looked like I had another head almost growing right here.
Mm-hmm.
Just very uncomfortable and painful,
mm-hmm.
which is why they were. Like, it can't be cancer because cancerous tumors usually aren't painful.
But when it's stretching on everything.
Yeah, it hurt a lot. Now we're in April, and I had a second lump appear under my left armpit. And it caused my left breast to become very swollen, which I went to my OB, and they were like, well, you are pregnant. And it could be a clogged or an infected milk duct, or, you know, we don't know what's going on. Nonetheless, they referred me to a surgical oncologist
mm-hmm.
in Spokane, and they got me in with her immediately.
Okay.
Upon my arrival to meet her, she wasn't the warmest of people, but she knew exactly what she was talking about. She's like, from top to bottom, tell me when you notice your symptoms and all the way up until present. Told her my whole story, which I felt like I've told a million times, you know, because
mm-hmm.
I'm at this point, I'm like, please, someone help me.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to stop you right there. We got to take a break right now, but we're talking to Ashley Holden about her story of cancer and being an overcomer, and we'll pick it up right where we left off right after these messages. Don't go away. Well, we're back. We're talking to Ashley Holden about her story of overcoming cancer. And Ashley, you were at the part of the story where you had gone to the surgeon in Spokane, and for the first time, they had some important insight for you. So let's pick it up right there. That's where you left it off with the surgeon. What did the surgeon say to you?
She goes, "I'm going to tell you right now, it's not breast cancer. It's either some kind of weird cat scratch fever thing that's blown up in your system because you're pregnant, or it's lymphoma," which I had known that my grandpa has had lymphoma before. So, but I didn't really know all of the, you know, technical bullets about it. She referred me to an ENT in Spokane that deals with oncology, and shout out to Dr. Bunn, ENT.
You know what's funny? I just realized that you said that. I went to medical school with Dr. Bunn. He was in my brother's class. He was ahead of me.
He's literally my saving grace.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So he got me in immediately. They like rushed me through.
Okay.
I sat in his office. He had an ultrasound machine right in his office. He looked at my neck and he was like, "I'm so sorry that this is taking you so long to find anything, but I'm going to get you in for a biopsy like in a few days." Mm-hmm. Usually it would have taken someone to schedule for him like months out, but he got me in a few days. And I think I saw him on a Monday. He had me in surgery on a Wednesday.
So it wasn't just like a biopsy in the office.
No, he took a group of lymph nodes out.
Okay, so it was real surgery.
Yeah. Which was really scary because it had a big risk of hitting a nerve that could have possibly like paralyzed the side of my face.
But that's why they're ENTs.
Exactly, and I really trusted him. So we did it. The baby was fine. I had... now this is in June, so
how many, when is the baby's due date?
Baby's due date is in September.
Okay, so you're getting there.
So I'm getting there. He did the surgery and took out a group of lymph nodes by Friday. Now the surgery was on a Wednesday. By Friday, I had found out that it was definitely lymphoma. So I now know that I have cancer. Don't know what type of lymphoma.
I know, I think it was on a Wednesday that you found something out, because I remember your sister got that phone call.
Yeah, and I just had to kind of wait. Nonetheless, Dr. Bunn referred me to Dr. Kaya at Cancer Care Northwest, who's like my second angel, and he's like, "You need to get in immediately." So I, the following week, met with Dr. Kaya.
So they told you it was a lymphoma?
It was lymphoma. Definitely lymphoma. I met with Dr. Kaya. He really amazed me because he followed my story from the beginning. He was up, he told me he was up all night doing research, reading all the books, all of the articles, all of the patients that were pregnant with a lymphoma. You know, how were they treated? What kind of chemo did they get?
Wow.
You know, so he really did his research. Because it's terrifying, you know, am I going to be able to keep this baby? Am I going to lose another one? Am I going to be able to live? Because obviously I've had lymphoma from the beginning, December of the previous year. So, he goes, "I'm going to put an order in for you to get your port placed. The following week, we're going to start chemo. I'm going to put you on R-CHOP, which I don't know all the medicines, but it's Rituxan, prednisone. It's pretty aggressive. My cancer was an aggressive rare form, which turned out to be gray zone lymphoma, which I think it's like 3% of population ever gets it.
3% of the cancer population.
Yeah, gets it, which is very rare. Gray zone, by the way, has characteristics of Hodgkin's and non-Hodgkin's. typically you treat it as non-Hodgkin's, large diffuse B, large B-cell diffuse.
Yeah. Now, Hodgkin's is one, if I remember right, that hits younger people.
Yes. So not only was I 24, I was diagnosed with a rare form of lymphoma at 7 months pregnant, and an aggressive one.
Mm-hmm. So, and let's talk, what are you thinking at this point, or how are you dealing with this mentally? Because, like, here's all your dreams, all your hopes, you got a new baby, you got all kinds of dreams, and, your life is going well, you're married to your high school sweetheart, everything, and now this thing just turned your life upside down.
So, I gave myself, when Dr. Bunn called me and confirmed it was lymphoma, I literally gave myself no more than 20 minutes to cry about it. No lie. I called my family, let them know what it was, and it's like the shock hits you. So I'm kind of crying on the phone. But after I let everyone know and I cried about it, I'm like, all right, let's get these gloves on, It's time to go, because the moment you let your mind, start thinking negatively, like, I'm going to die from this, or can I die? I didn't let it become a possibility.
So you never let that thought go through your mind?
No,
That's a part that's really fascinating to me, and how you deal with this kind of news and how you just come out as a fighter.
Yeah. I never gave myself the chance to think that I was going to die.
Okay.
Because I had another life to fight for,
Yeah.
If I were going to die, I at least was going to save one of us.
Yeah.
It was going to be the baby. So, so rare form of cancer. I got my port placed, which was another surgery. Never even knew what a port was. It was conscious sedation. So I felt everything, and I was talking about like cheesesteaks and all kind of stuff. Not the typical, surgeries fear that people have. And then the week after I started my chemo, the first three rounds of chemo that I had while pregnant was at Sacred Heart Medical Center in Spokane. They gave me my own private room in the back of the oncology floor. And I was allowed, like, my family to come back there with me. Maternal fetal medicine at Sacred Heart also.
So they have a whole.
Yeah. So my OB switched from Sandpoint to maternal fetal in Spokane. Mm-hmm. And they're not even doctors. I don't know what the name of them are. But they specialize in, like, severe pregnancies, complicated cases. And mine was definitely a complicated case. So my oncologist and them were like hand in hand for everything. So if I was on the chemo floor for a treatment, maternal fetal medicine came in like every hour monitoring the baby, making sure the heartbeat was fine, making sure that I was okay,
So you had a fantastic team around you.
Awesome support team. Like, I didn't have to worry.
How did your family handle this?
So being that my mom and my mother-in-law was all on the East Coast, and here I am in, the northern west of the United States, was pretty hard. But my mom did come for my first chemo. So she sat there with me. She was there for the whole thing. My family didn't really, they knew I was strong. I sounded strong. I looked strong. They were there if I needed them, but they knew I was okay.
You've got a sticker on your card that says "Holding Strong."
Holding strong all day.
Because I know Holden is your last name. And
yeah,
Holding
strong, and that was my hashtag for everything. And I documented my whole journey from beginning to the end. When I had to shave my head, and that was really emotional because I had like long, pretty hair. It was the best part about me, I thought, was my hair. But I realized that wasn't my heart was, and my integrity. So. Throughout the entire journey, three rounds of chemo with the baby, then gave natural birth to Adriana, who is super healthy and gorgeous, and she's definitely a fighter. I immediately started three last rounds of chemo a week after, and by October the 1st, I was declared in complete remission.
Wow.
So diagnosed in June, complete remission in October.
Wow.
Yeah.
And when was the baby born?
August the 21st.
Wow, and that was a little bit early?
Yeah, so they induced me, and I was in labor all day, and I ended up having her at 3:15 on the 21st.
And how many rounds of chemo did you get while pregnant?
Three.
And then how many afterwards?
After three. So a total of six rounds.
So she got some...
She got hit pretty hard, you know, but the placenta blocked everything, all of the poison and toxins to, you know, touch her. She's completely healthy, developmentally. She's a trooper.
Yeah.
So.
We've got to take a break right now, but incredible story we're hearing. And, you know, going from getting a cancer diagnosis, actually, first of all, going around to doctors for 6 months and not knowing what the cause of your problem is, finally getting the diagnosis, getting the right doctors that put you on the right chemotherapy agents, to then being declared cancer-free. Incredible story. I'd really love to delve into what are some of the factors, what are some of the sources of strength and inspiration, because I think your story is, to me, very, very inspiring, and I think those are some important lessons. I'd love to hear that from you, so we've got to take a break, but we'll be right back.
So, and let's talk a little bit, what were some of your support systems, or what did you use to get you through those dark times? And the part that's inspiring is how you're just in everything, you're just like, you're a fighter. And I see that in, as you work with different people, some people just give up and just say, oh, well, this is my fate, or this always happens to me, or whatever. Like, some people just adopt a pessimistic attitude.
Yeah.
So how were you able to maintain this fighting thing? How were you able to only cry for 20 minutes, so to speak?
Yeah.
And just pull it together. Let's talk about
I think it really honestly stemmed from childhood. I've always been a person who I always felt like I was a little different. I thought differently, and, you know, I knew that I had some kind of purpose on this earth. I was always like the mother hen. I wanted to make sure everybody was okay before myself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So when I got this diagnosis, it was kind of like a, okay, I'm being blessed with cancer. And I say that all the time. It was a blessing. It wasn't a...
How were you able to say that? That's amazing. I love hearing that you can view it, you know,
yeah,
such a bad, terrible thing as a blessing.
I say I was blessed with cancer because I realized my purpose was to be able to go through this journey to be able to bless others. So it was a blessing to me just so I could bless other people.
Mm-hmm.
Nonetheless, I think my optimism started from childhood, seeing, you know, my mom eventually be a single mom, raising three kids, working in law enforcement. My dad wasn't ever really there. We had a pretty tough childhood, and I just knew that I had to be somebody that could be a superhero for other people. So when this hit me, I immediately knew that this was my calling, you know, was to be a positive enforcement for others, to be able to uplift others when they have no hope at all. Because all my help comes from God, and that was my number one support system, was God. And if I had that, I knew I was okay. You know, even when thoughts tried to creep in and they tried to be dark, I would just like pray through everything, because that's the only way I'm going to get through it.
Mm-hmm. And so prayer, God, your family.
Family. I had the Lymphoma and Leukemia Society help financially. They paid like 2 months worth of our truck payment. And Sandpoint has a nonprofit charity group called Celebration of Life.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave me they helped me with gas. They helped me with baby clothes, you know, like financial support, which was awesome. Someone started a GoFundMe page and helped me a lot, you know. So I had, honestly, nationwide support from all these people, which was super, super amazing.
So that's also like lifts you up because you feel like you're not struggling alone. And go ahead and mention the organization that you said locally that helped you.
So Celebration of Life, ironically, fast forward, and I'm getting my port flushed at Bonner General, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's this nurse, and I'm like, I'm recording everything, documenting how she flushes my port. And through conversation, she's like, you know, you're so inspiring because you're so positive, and I really like the fact that you're showing people your journey through this. And she's like, my mom had cancer, and she passed, and we started a charity called Celebration of Life.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, you guys helped me so much. So I got to meet the daughter of the person who made all of this possible for me, and it, like, brought me to a pivotal moment. Like, God, you're aligning. I'm in alignment with his will, like,
mm-hmm.
every step of the way, which is, like, it gives me goosebumps because sometimes when I feel like I'm veering off to the left, you know, of my walk, he always puts me right back on track.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm where I'm supposed to be, talking to who I'm supposed to be, which gives me more power. I know that I'm living for him and I'm doing what he set out for me to do, you know?
Love hearing that positivity. And so, what advice do you have for people that maybe have this diagnosis or that are dealing with it? You have any advice for them or how they can stay positive?
So I tell everyone it's mind over matter. You truly have to believe in yourself that you are a fighter, you know, that this is not going to bring you down. This is not a death sentence. You give it all you got until the end, and it's just positive environment, positive words, positive thoughts.
Do you have affirmations or do anything like that, or do you how do you keep the negative thoughts out of your head? Because I'm sure when you're trying to fall asleep at night, you probably got
bad
thoughts.
My brain doesn't turn off. I go to sleep with motivational speeches. I wake up in the morning with motivational speeches. I send you motivational speeches. I listen to people that are uplifting. I don't have friends or acquaintances who are negative in my life. You know, only people that are more successful have reached a higher success level than me or are aspiring to, because no one underneath is going to help me, you know? So I keep a positive group of people around me, always educating myself, always asking questions, always, you know, trying to get into rooms that I'm probably not supposed to be in, but I'm in that room anyway, and you guys are going to know who I am, you know. That's how I stay positive.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that and putting that investment in myself, I can pour that out to other people.
Mm-hmm. And tell me, so let's talk now. So that was October of 2018. Did I get that right?
That in remission?
Yes.
2019.
Okay.
Last year.
So last year, so October 2019, and where, so let's talk about prognosis from there.
So I have a 5-year time period after complete remission. So I'm technically still fighting. My body has no cancer cells in it, Lord's will, but I still have to wait until the 5 years after that date of remission to I'm officially cured.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been 1 year. So I have 4 more years left to go. I still have my port. I still get my port flushed. Every 3 months I get a CT PET scan. And the ways that I combat, you know, it possibly coming back is eating healthier, making sure that I drink a lot of water, don't eat a ton of sugar, which is sometimes hard, but changing my diet, eating more fruits and vegetables instead of eating a bunch of meats.
Mm.
Or if I am eating meat, like a lean meat or, you know, something like that, that helps significantly. End result, I'm going to beat it. I'll be cured in 5 years.
Love it.
But the prognosis is slim chance of me ever having it again.
So it's very good.
Yeah, very good.
And then
good.
What about for your daughter?
So they told me that they've done studies where children that have had chemo in utero up to 25 years old have been perfectly fine. There is a small chance that she could have leukemia or some kind of autoimmune disease. But so far, so good. She's perfectly healthy.
I love it. And I love it that you've also, because I look at that as adopting, you know, all of us can do better. I'm very passionate about lifestyle and getting people to eat healthy and exercise and go out in the sunshine and drink plenty of water and doing all these healthy things. That doesn't mean you'll never get cancer, but it just means you're going to reduce those chances and help, you know, strengthen your body. And even in this COVID era, you know, just keep your immune system strong. So, you know, you are going to, we're all exposed to bugs and bacteria and viruses.
Taking your vitamins, and doctors kept me up on my, you know, magnesium and my B12. And I take those every day, and zinc, you know, every single day I take my vitamins, always drinking water.
Good. Vitamin D.
Vitamin D, getting that in there, keeping my bones healthy, you know, because it is a blood cancer. So I want to make sure that the main source of my blood stays healthy and,
And for all of us, and, you know, avoiding sugar, because cancer loves
sugar.
So
essentially when I do my PET scan and I didn't know, they shoot radioactive sugar into my veins to make, if there is any cancer, go to it. So that's a prime example
of it. So, well, Ashley, thank you so much for sharing your story. I think it's, super inspiring to others, and I think you're now working with us here at Idaho Pain Clinic, and you've been a ball of sunshine and positivity, and I just really admire how, despite, you know, these tough chances, one of the big lessons that I see, some people, it's easy to switch into victim mode where you're just like, why me, why does this always, you know, you can just get really, really down on yourself, and most of us haven't gone through any challenges anywhere near what you've gone through, but sometimes we'll throw our own pity parties and feel sorry for ourselves and sit there and mope, you know, with a much smaller problem.
Yeah.
And so I think it's super inspiring how you, with this big, huge obstacle, you know, looking to
death,
a certain extent, looking death in the face at 24 years old, you know, looking at losing a baby that's growing inside you, and, you know, and it sounds like I would have been for the second time. So that was, you know, and just the way you stayed positive, you stayed calm, because you've got this wonderful, calm demeanor.
Yeah.
And then just even your attitude about, you know, your approach to everything. So thank you so much for being willing to come on and share that with us and inspire us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we got to take a break right now, but when we come back, I want to touch on the coronavirus. I haven't done this on the radio, but I think it's an important topic that's on a lot of people's minds. I want to talk and actually look at some of the pros and cons of wearing masks, as well as looking at some of our local data available from the Panhandle Health District. So you want to stick around for that? We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Dr. Soren here, and I'd like to look at some of the actual numbers from our Panhandle Health District, which includes the five northern counties of Idaho, including Boundary County, Bonner County, Kootenai County, Benoit, and Shoshone counties. We've had a total of 4,028 cases. It's interesting, more females have been diagnosed, but more males have passed away from this disease. The majority of the cases are actually in young people. The highest group is 18 to 29. And then you kind of see a downward trend in that. So the fewest have been over 90. But of course, we have fewer people that are over 90 in these counties. So that's why you're seeing more of these in young people. Now, if we look at deaths from this, have been, there's only one person between the ages of 50 to 59 that has died. Nobody under the age of 50 has died. And then the majority of the deaths have been people in their 70s, 80s, and 90s. Looks like about 21 people in each of those age groups. If we look at the counties where people have passed away, Kootenai is by far the most with 45. Shoshone is next with 19, and then Benoit 3, Bonner County 2, and Boundary County 1. So thankfully in Bonner County, the death rate, we've only had, looks like, two deaths. And so, and again, just hospitalizations, we saw kind of a spike late July, early August, and then a pretty dramatic decrease, but now we're kind of seeing a gentle increase again in October here. So let's talk just a little bit about the ways to prevent this. And specifically, I want to talk about wearing face masks and how you can avoid this disease. Now, I make this little joke that the best way to prevent the coronavirus is the same as in contraception. There is only one proven 100% effective way, which is abstinence. So if you want a foolproof way, you need to stay away from the virus. So that's by far the safest thing to do if you're very concerned. Now, let's talk a little bit about wearing face masks. One thing people really need to be aware of is when people wear face masks, the mask is annoying, and especially if you're not used to wearing it all the time, you're going to be tempted to touch your face all the time. Now, if you just touch your face and you've been breathing on this face mask and then you touch something else, you may have just undone any benefit of this. If wearing a face mask makes you touch your face continuously, you're not getting the benefit of it because you are touching the mask, which is collecting your respiratory fluids. So that's point number one, is just be careful touching your face, or be aware of that. And if you do it all the time, you really are undoing any potential benefit from that. So one of the things with that is I think sometimes people may feel like they're more protected than they really are because they're wearing this face mask. So keep that in mind as you wear them. Secondly, there are some downsides to wearing a mask. Now, there's an interesting article that was published in Anesthesiology magazine journal, which talks about the, you know, exercise benefit, if you will. I think it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek article written about, like, saying, well, wearing a mask makes your heart and lungs work harder, so it's just like exercising, and then they quantify it here. I want to remind people there's two purposes to breathing. One is to get rid of CO2, and the other one is to take in oxygen. Normally, we just think about getting oxygen, but eliminating CO2 is very important. So when you even light exercise can drastically increase the work of breathing when you wear a mask. So what they define as two metabolic equivalents, which is like a slow walk, there is a noticeable increase of the inhaled carbon dioxide. The resulting increase in inhaled carbon dioxide is normally 0.04. So the normal level is 0.04% that you're breathing when you don't have a mask on. But when you wear a mask, that inhaled carbon dioxide can go up to 2 or even 3%, depending on how you're how vigorous you're moving. Now, this can cause a transient respiratory acidosis with a compensatory increase in minute ventilation, increase in the work of breathing, and increase in cardiac output. In English, what that means is your body, your heart, and your lungs are going to work harder to get rid of that CO2, because your CO2 level could be as much as 50 times higher than normal. So your heart and lungs are going to have to work harder to compensate for that. Symptoms of this can include sweating, visual changes, headache, dyspnea, increased irritability, and decreased reasoning, decreased alertness, and exercise endurance. And this is an article from Anesthesiology 2020 by Brian Davis and all. But interesting things there. So independently, the inspired oxygen is normally 21%, but when you wear a mask, it actually drops to 17%. So this can also cause symptoms like lightheadedness, headaches, drowsiness, muscular weakness, difficulty breathing on exertion, nausea, vomiting. And simultaneously, one other factor, there's augmented resistance to inspiratory and expiratory flow. So in other words, when you breathe in and breathe out, your body has to work harder. So those are just some things to think about. And, you know, I see people walking by themselves or, you know, driving in a car by themselves wearing a mask. And especially if you're older in a more vulnerable age group, I think that's just something people should be aware of, that your heart and lungs are going to have to work harder. So if your heart and lungs are already kind of on the borderline of holding up, if they're if you don't have a strong heart, don't have strong lungs, just be careful exercising with this mask on. And, you know, ideally be somewhere far away from other people. But certainly be aware of the downsides of that. So anyway, I want to encourage everybody to stay healthy. You know, take your vitamins, get some sunshine whenever we have it. Thank you for joining us today. Have a great day.